going on, everybody? This is Tuesday night. This is Dynasty Points. It's just Jacob and I. Lucas has some stuff he's dealing with. Cut to brass tacks. There's going to be no player picks this week. Lucas was not able to get his in. I will say, shout out to Jacob. He's now in the lead. What a unbelievable comeback this has been in the race. I got to get my stuff together. I'm going to have a week to get myself using the Fantasy Points matchup tool to get me in. I just want to kick the show off today. Sad note, Andre Brower has passed away. Obviously, I know him most from Brooklyn Nine-Nine. He's just an unbelievable actor, and everything that I've ever read about him is nothing but positive. So we always say check in on your loved ones, even if you don't know they need it. This is why we don't know when or how, but it happens. Sad. But hey, go and watch your Brooklyn Nine-Nines this weekend and just enjoy yourself and have a good time. I just wanted to get that out. Jacob, before we signed off last week, we said that we were going to do what should teams do that are rebuilders first. Well, we switched that up because I think you had an absolute banger of an idea, and we're going to tie it into Dynasty. This week, we are talking about players we think are going to be legitimate league winners. Now, if you don't have a trade deadline, you can do what I did today, and you can go and acquire the players you think are going to be league winners. I acquired one of those players today in a league that we are both in, and I can't wait to dive into it. I'm feeling good, but first, we promised everyone we would update everybody on the home league and the league of record.
Yes.
So let's do that. We actually had a stat correction that changed matchup implications. You want to go over it?
Yeah, let's do it. So we're the league of record, which myself, Tom, and our beloved former co-host Billy, and
Tom Lee, you know, the host, and just so many
walkabout Tom Lee, everybody's in there. So we're all kind of battling it out, and we had a few big matchups coming into this week. There were theoretically up to five teams still alive for the last couple of playoff spots, where we had Tom Lee at the top, followed the Bear Docs on the other buy slot. And then Tom and Maddie were pretty much locked into the three and the four in some sort of order. And coming into the week, it was myself and Andrew Jameson in the five and the six seeds, with a cadre of folks right behind us, including Barry, Tom's brother-in-law, sitting right behind me. And we had kind of an interesting situation where I was playing Tom Lee, so the number one seed in the league, and Barry's playing Tom, the number three seed in the league. So if we both had lost going into this, into these games, all of a sudden it'd be a mad rush on who gets in on points. So anyway, we found a way to pull it out. We said we're not relying on anybody's help for anybody, despite pretty much languishing as a middle of the road team all year, and then losing Tank Dell and deciding, yeah, this probably isn't the thing. We're going to trade Cooper Kupp and Tony Pollard about 15 minutes before the trade deadline. We put up the highest score in the league this week, and we beat the number one seed. So yeah, we got in to the five slot.
It's so unreal.
I'll now be facing Tom in the first round.
Right.
But I looked like for a while I wasn't going to be facing Tom in the first round, because Tom looked like he was going to get the three seed. Maddie ends up winning on a stat correction, so he goes up into three seed. So now it's me versus Tom in the 4-5, and Maddie facing Andrew in the 3-6.
And here's why this is important. So Andrew Jameson, friend of mine, a friend of ours, play baseball together, good dude. His team is in shambles right now. Like, everyone's on IR. He might put up 120. It was the easiest path to the semifinals. Both matchups in the semifinals is a nightmare between DeBaradox and, I've said it before, the best dynasty player I know, Tom Lee. So either way, it's a nightmare, but the path was easier. But now, for content purposes, this is going to be a great time for you and I.
I mean, you've got to be like an 80-20 favorite. Like, again, like, I basically sold my team to punt it into the lottery last week after the injuries. And I don't know, man. It's so funny because my team did this last year where I was like lingering. I was like, I don't know. And then I won like two in a row at the end to almost get in, if not for the Julio Jones catch. So this team seems to respond to, like, if I ever want to get something out of this team, I just trade away some good players, and then everybody else starts scoring. So we have Njoku, we have Drake London, we have Garrett Wilson, all the guys who went off last week. So hopefully this ramshackle squad rallies hard this week and takes down Tom.
So I, for people that don't know, in the, our legal record, and we'll move on to the actual content. I just think this is a fun to talk about because we're in this just as deep as you guys are. We care about it just as much, even as portfolio players where we have tons, 30, 40 plus leagues. We're still in this. I have the second most wins all time in this league, and I've never won. And every year I get screwed over somehow by my quarterbacks. I'm rolling with Carr and Winston in my second QB slot. But other than that, the lineup, we just talked about it. Having to not make a decision, trading for Debo was huge. Like, this is going to be my year. I feel strongly that I'll finally get past finishing third. And then same with the home league. Home league went nuts. We played divisions, four divisions, three in each, all rivals. They all matter with league, with division record tiebreakers. And we have a
9-5 team out of the playoffs. Yeah.
Out of the playoffs because they crazy just couldn't league. Cut it. I'm the 5-time division champion, never been defeated in my division, so shout out to me. It's going to be a great time in the home league. Can't wait to update everybody heading into Sunday. I might do a Sunday little video here. For
so you're playing Andrew, first round of that one. Yep. And we're not playing this week because we locked down the one seed last week, so we'll be sitting at home. For the people at home, Tom and I are on opposite sides of the bracket. So we will not be playing each other in the semis. Hopefully, for content purposes, we will be facing off in the finals. I can almost promise you that if we both make it to the finals in the home league this year, that we will have some sort of entertaining bet for people. But let's not put the cart before the horse. We got three games to win before that. Yeah. The dream finals happens.
That would be just an unbelievable content matchup. I'm excited. The fantasy playoffs are here. And I can't wait. We had somebody ask, can we please get Will Levis talk? We're going to talk about the Mayo Man. We're going to talk about the Mayo Man first. He's not going to be a part of the league winner section.
Yeah, he's going to be a part of the league winners
He is going to be a part of the league winner section. Well, then let's just kick it off. Jacob, why is Will Levis going to be in the league winner section?
Well, one of the upsides of Will Levis, and I remember, like, I don't even know if we talked about this specifically or if this was a conversation I had in a group chat or in my head or what, but I remember when he first took over, his early schedule, his first few matchups were not too easy. Like, he had that Pittsburgh matchup, he had some high-pressure defenses, and specifically with Levis, it's not even just about is sort of the secondary good or is it a traditionally good matchup. He's really, really dependent at this point on, is he in a clean pocket? And the Titans offensive line is not good. He compounds that by being quite bad under pressure. So can he be in matchups where they're able to hold up or not? Which even, you know, a matchup like Tampa Bay, where it's a really blitz heavy team, even though that's a favorable matchup for a lot of quarterbacks, that was one that I was a little bit worried about for him. He comes in the last month, it's nothing but green on the matchup chart. And that's where, you know, if you wanted to buy into Levis and ride out some of the early pain, you're kind of waiting into that late season push where maybe he can establish himself going into the offseason. Will Levis, over his last three playoff games here, he's going to end up facing Houston twice.
Yeah.
Really, really weak secondary right now. And the total pass funnel defense, it's much stronger against the run. We just saw Zach Wilson light them up recently. And then he's going to face, in between that, I want to say Seattle. Seattle. There we go. Okay, that's what I thought. And then I blanked for a second. And Seattle's defense has been atrocious through the air so far, and really on the ground, and really just overall over this last half of the season as they've gotten lit up. So Houston, Seattle, phenomenal matchups for him. And matchups where if C.J. Stroud is healthy and if Geno is healthy, I also expect it to be pushed, where I don't think that they're going to be able to just establish all day. Levis has that really high event, volatile, back and forth game last night against Miami. And I think this is a guy that potentially can be like a value type winner, value accumulator, as he kind of asserts his stranglehold on this position going into next year. But I also think has an opportunity with how bad the quarterback situation is right now across the league to actually be a top 12 quarterback the rest of the way here. We saw him running a little bit more this week. We saw him have success passing. We've seen him just continue to build that chemistry with DeAndre Hopkins. They have Treylon Burks back. So I'm actually legitimately excited about Will Levis. In terms of what I'd pay for him, I think I still have him. Like, I'm definitely paying the late first. Probably my cutoff would be like, 106, 107 range would be kind of where I'd be looking in terms of like just straight up draft pick value. But like, certainly if I had a team where there was like a starting wide receiver running back, maybe I could spare, maybe I need to add him as a quarterback option. That'd be where I'd probably be looking more than just the picks, but that's kind of the value idea would be that 106, 107 range for me.
I agree. He's definitely had some throws that should have been picked off. But
oh, yeah.
What quarterback kind of doesn't? So that's how I'm looking at it. He's had 41 deep balls already. 41. We want that. NFL team.
He already leads the NFL in most completions over 50 air yards.
It's insane.
He started for like four games.
Hopkins is dialing it back on the age clock. He's balling right now. Will Levis is a first read machine. 77% are going to his first read, and that first read's name is DeAndre Hopkins.
Yes.
What I like about the running is that he can do it in the red zone, and I don't want him taking a beating. The way, like, some of the hits he's taking, running Jalen Ramsey over, and that dude's.
I think he's delivering the hits as much as he's taking the hits.
I think he should have been in concussion protocol contact. Twice. I think he should have been in concussion protocol twice. No lie, like that was insane what he was doing. But he loves it, and they feed off of him. Yeah. He can take one in on the ground, absolutely. In terms of league winning, I don't know if he has the 25. You know. In these games in him, but he definitely has the dog in him, and that's at minimum what you need. And he is kind of avoiding turnovers. He only has three in all of his starts.
My plea to people on the Will Levis side is just like, he has not even started half a season of games yet. Like,
right.
I'm just pleading with people to not only focus on the bad plays. Like, there are bad plays. There are going to be more bad plays. He's a rookie quarterback. And he's not some picture perfect, prospect who came
he's not
out
polished
extremely polished
at all. You
right.
Can,
not polished. You, very rough.
The fadeaway, like guy in his face, fadeaway from his left, like dump off. I looked at that. I was like, that is impressive.
Right.
One thing we definitely, I'm with you. I'm in that late first category. I would trade Russ plus. I would trade these old and brokens. I would trade Stafford plus. I would trade all these guys to go and get them if you're not a contending team or you just want to add a quarterback. Like you said, if I got wide receivers, I traded Deontay Johnson for him. Pretty much, I think it was Deontay in a three for Will Levis after his first game. I have no regrets about that. I am not regretting that trade whatsoever. So, he can definitely still be bought. There are still detractors. There are people that are still against the Will Levis era, but it's coming. And he's locked in as the starter next year.
They may end up being right. Like they may end up being right. I really have no like firm idea of it. He has like massive holes in his game.
Yeah.
I just implore people to focus more on the flashes than the bad plays for guys like first half of the season. Like I think the priors just play such a role here where, I always go back to Fields, but like Fields is in year three and people are like, oh, I don't care about his bad game. I don't care about this bad play. Like, look at these flashes. And he does have like legitimately brilliant flashes. And then with Will Levis, it's like, okay, the flashes are cool, but what about this turnover or this sack or whatever? It's like, he's, 2 years behind some of these guys. Like, he makes four or five throws every game that simply like just don't happen very frequently from NFL quarterbacks. So I just love the upside with him. I think if he can piece it together, and a lot of that's going to be mental and working outside of the lines. But if he can piece it together, I'm just a huge fan.
No fear, plus arm talent. Not afraid to run. Like that's what you're looking for in a prospect. And you're right, he's not polished. There's going to be some ugly moments. I'm willing to pay that late one plus. If I have to send a two on top of it and try to get a three back, I'm doing it because the value, if that hits, is just going to be so worth it compared to you losing. Okay, I lost out on a late one. That sucks. You can make up that value back. if you're a good manager. I understand the people that are like, I don't do trades well. I'm not very good at recovering from a loss. I understand if you're not willing to buy him then. I get it. I totally get it. You don't have to do it. It's just we love what we see. We're excited. I've had a couple of comments and DMs and yeah, it's I mean, it's all systems go for me when it comes to Will.
Like we started out as a pro Drew Lock podcast. Now it's a pro Will Levis podcast.
Correct.
My comp for Levis continues to be what if Drew Lock was maybe good?
Yeah.
So we'll see.
That's really good. I want to talk about the next player, and I think this is going to be the conversation that maybe takes us the longest, so I want to knock it out early. It's Brock Purdy for me. And you're like, oh, what do you mean he's a league winner? Everyone knows he's a league winner. I get it. I'm cheating here a little bit because of how good Brock... Oh, Tom, he's the QB5 and 4-point pass. I get it. I know. I totally know. He is a league winner. But he has Arizona, which they could easily get up early. Shanahan keeps the foot down until about halfway through the fourth quarter. That's right, Toronto Dave. Big cock Brock. Not afraid to say it. He has Baltimore, which Matthew Stafford just toasted up. We're going to talk about that Baltimore defense and why it's beatable. They are the fake number one seed in the AFC, but with Lamar, that game was absolutely insane.
You have some internalized hatred over your own team.
Like because their defense is beatable. They're not a scary matchup in terms of, oh, my guys won't produce.
I mean, they might not be that great of a team, but I think that they are the best team in the AFC. Like, there's just no perfect team in the AFC.
True, right. It's not the NFC is wild. And then if
Dallas was in the AFC, they would be like an overwhelming favorite. And they'd be they're clearly not the favorite in the NFC. But I think Baltimore is the best of the group in the AFC. I mean, they're my pick in the AFC preseason. I'm sticking by that. But that's more due to like I just have even more questions about the other teams in the AFC. I mean, weirdly enough, I still think if Buffalo gets in, they're extremely live.
I think they're cooked, but that's me personally. I want to talk about... Sorry, I just keep hitting this little button on my headset here. Keep muting myself. Washington's the matchup you want to target throughout these playoffs, and he gets him in week 17. So that's championship winning. Washington is so horrendously bad. I think there's only three quarterbacks that haven't passed 230 yards. They're giving up plus 7 passing fantasy points, DraftKings fantasy points per game, according to Jake Tribby. Did the DFS early look last night? He's gonna win leagues. Now, how this pertains to his dynasty value, which is the important part of this, Brock Purdy should be going in the mid-second round in startups next offseason, and he won't because there is an ick upon Brock Purdy that is uncurable. It does not matter how good he is. The craziest stat that I have found so far from Brock Purdy comes from Steven Ruiz. The most insane Brock Purdy, this is quote, this is at the Steven Ruiz. He's a writer for The Ringer. The most insane Brock Purdy stat, if you take out all of his throws beyond the line of scrimmage, he'd still lead the NFL in yards per attempt and EPA per dropback. He's averaging 8.8 yards per attempt and 0.38 EPA on throws of 0 air yards or less. Now, that is a crazy stat. His screen game is unbelievable.
His screen game? He's the driving force of that screen game?
Right, but I'm just saying that's...
Not number 23 or number 19 or the man in the hat.
That is
the
big... What I'm saying is that is the big ha got you moment for Brock Purdy, which I understand that people will hold that against him. His EPA per pass on throws traveling more than 0 yards in the air since 2021, number one. He does not just need the screen game. He is throwing the ball downfield. That is per Scott Barrett. He is throwing the ball downfield. We saw it just last week. He dotted George Kittle. He dotted Debo. He's not just dinking and dunking it. He is throwing the ball beyond 10, 15, and plus yards in the air. He is still doing it. And I understand the weapons, the efficiency. Get it. Got it. Good. I don't think quarterbacks should get knocked for that. I think they should only get knocked for that if they're also not producing with those things. We don't want to knock Tua because, oh, he has X and X weapons. We bump Tua up for that reason. We should bump Brock Purdy up for that reason. The best part is you don't have to.
For that reason.
What's that?
Said I knocked Tua for those reasons, and I knocked Purdy. The difference between
they
them is
be
I have a ton of, well, but they are pumped up for that. That's why they score so many fantasy points.
Right. But that's so what I'm saying in that is that if you're looking at Tua the way that you're looking at Tua and Brock Purdy is doing a better version of Tua than Tua is, then we should be viewing Purdy a little bit higher and closer to that range than we are. And what people are going to do, especially with a new young class of rookie quarterbacks about to come in and excite people, people will still find a way to look down on Brock Purdy, regardless if he goes and wins a championship for them in week 17, which I think is a fundamental flaw in Dynasty. It is, oh, he's an outlier. No, the outlier is quarterbacks just being good in the NFL and for fantasy. Like, that's the outlier. So when we have a quarterback who is good, not just good, but showing that he can be elite through stretches, he beat the shit out of Philadelphia. And it's, well, he can't. Can he win the big game? Can he make the tight throws? Can he beat the good teams? Last year as a rookie, he beats Dallas in the playoffs, which ended in the most hilarious fashion possible. With still beat him. Beat Zeke. Didn't beat Zeke, but Zeke playing center on the final play will never not be funny. And then he plays Philly this year and beats them so bad that they're still reeling to this day. It is crazy.
Debo beats them.
Yes, he did. Nah, Brock Purdy. Okay. QBs are a win.
Like, people did this shit with Jimmy, and it's the same morons that did this with Jimmy are still doing this with Purdy, and Jimmy can't even beat
him. He's not Jimmy Garoppolo, though.
Okay, here's Jimmy Garoppolo and his sample of games. Here's Jimmy Garoppolo and his sample of games with Christian McCaffrey. 70.6% completions, 9-1 touchdown interception, 6.4% sack rate, 8 adjusted net yards per attempt, 110.5 quarterback rating. Brock Purdy with CMC. 69% completion percentage, slightly lower. 3.5-1 touchdown to interception ratio, much lower. 6.5% sack rate, higher. 8.7 adjusted net yards per attempt, higher, marginally. 103.8 quarterback rating, marginally higher. It's the same thing. We see this every year in San Francisco. Like, this is why I was excited about buying Brock Purdy into the season, because you can't fail. You can't fail. If Sam Darnold was the quarterback this year, it would be the exact same. I'd be buying Sam Darnold. Like, I have no Brock Purdy was a buy going into the season. He is, in my opinion, still a hold, because I still think this train is on a one-way road to Brock Purdy being valued the same as Tua and Trevor Lawrence and other guys eventually. And I'll get off the train at that point. So I still roster a lot of Brock Purdy in Dynasty. I'll probably continue to up until the point that he gets valued the way that Tom wants it to be valued. So Brock Purdy real life hater, and I will be probably forever. I think it's absolutely insane that he's like a co-favorite for MVP. But in Dynasty, he's been a buy, because, you know, he's going to keep producing as much as he's got.
If you go to our good friends over at Keep Trade Cut, they still have Brock Purdy at a very reasonable QB 13. And that's fine if you don't have him in your top 12. What I'm saying is that he should be there, in my opinion, based off what he is doing.
That's fine.
Right. And that's all I'm saying is, if he had a first round price tag, like if he was Bryce Young and Bryce Young was, you know, whatever. If Brock Purdy was Bryce Young and drafted in that spot, we would be doing jumping jacks and backflips because of how much of a smash this guy was. He would be where CJ Stroud is right now in Dynasty ranks, but he's not, because he's round 7 and he's playing in San Francisco. I think we're knocking him for the wrong reasons, and I think we're finding every reason to dismiss what he's doing, which is producing for your fantasy teams. And that's what we want. Now, do I think he should be above Justin Fields? I don't know.
Yeah.
It's right there with upside and whatever and rushing. I get it.
Okay.
But
that's where the Dynasty real life thing splits. Because I think it's insane that he's even in the same tier as Justin Fields. I would way rather have Brock Purdy.
People they fight to the death on this stuff. But we
he's
know
not
how
going
we feel
anywhere
about
anytime
Justin
soon.
Fields.
Like, I have no medium term concerns about Brock Purdy's job. He's going to be top 3 in MVP voting this year. He's not going anywhere.
So I just think that not only is he going to be a absolute league winner with his schedule, I think he's good enough that he should be valued at that mid-second price tag that Deshaun Watson was going at this offseason. And he's not going to, so you don't have to worry about it. In terms of paying, I would pay the two first price if I absolutely had to. But generally speaking, you still don't have to. And that's part of what triggers me so hard, is that he is acquirable for less, league depending, obviously. But for the masses, people are still just looking to get out while they can before they wait for an imaginary wheel to fall off. Like you said, he can't fail.
What I would like is for people to please listen to Tom and to get him up to two first-round value, because I'm very tired of having this big position on Brock Purdy. It just makes me uncomfortable as a Brock Purdy hater to derive joy from his success. Do you think I enjoy, like this week I was in the Full Tilt Dynasty Invitational and I'm stuck in this really unpleasant position where Tom and I have a win and in game for the playoffs and we get to the afternoon slate. And my only path to get into the playoffs is to root for fucking Brock Purdy. And sure enough, he delivers.
What did he do?
He delivers me the playoff spot. He delivers like he always does. Right? You know, he delivers like he always does. It's a lock. Anytime I look at my lineup and I see Brock Purdy, I'm like, oh, well, he's going to score a lot of points. Things are going to go well for me today. And then I just don't feel like I have any principles. So what I'm asking for, Dynasty community, is if you would like me to return to having principled stances in my life, start valuing Brock Purdy appropriately. Because for as long as you don't value Brock Purdy appropriately, I have to roster Brock Purdy, I have to cheer for Brock Purdy, and I don't deserve Brock Purdy. I hate Brock Purdy, but I keep rostering Brock Purdy, and it's your fault because you don't value him appropriately.
Yeah, again, like go... Okay, so this is the best way... So let's say with draft picks for sure. Okay, I would love to trade away Brock Purdy for two draft picks. What are the chances you're stumbling upon a quarterback with his upside?
His upside is his current. Like he has absolutely zero fantasy upside beyond his current pace, right? Like we are seeing his like max 115% ceiling. Like he's leading the world in EPA. He has all the best weapons. He's probably not going to run any more than he's running right now. So like, what's his points per game right now? Is it like 20? I want to say it's like roughly.
It's really good. Oh boy.
I mean, it depends on your
points.
Format.
His fantasy points per dropback is the best in guys that are named Anthony Richardson.
Sure, of course.
Per
dropback, right? But we're not, he's not dropping back as many times as other guys.
Right. But he's just unreal. I mean, Scott Barrett looks at fantasy points per dropback as like the only quarterback stat you need.
Yeah, Scott Barrett loves Brock Purdy, and
he does. And
he like loves him in real life, which actively causes me pain.
That again, I'm with you on the real life thing, but for fantasy football, more quarterbacks fail than they succeed, and I think Brock Purdy is what we wanted Baker Mayfield to be. And Baker Mayfield just wasn't, because Baker Mayfield turned out that he sucks.
Well, Baker Mayfield could be. Just didn't wind up in San Francisco.
Oh God, enough. It's just too much.
But no, for real, I mean, Brock Purdy's at 19.9 fantasy points per game in 4-point leagues, or at least with the exact settings I've punched in. I understand everybody uses slightly different settings for quarterbacks.
Not in my league, bro.
He's basically at 20, right? That's right around the average of what we get for your Joe Burrows and your Justin Herberts and your Trevor Lawrence, like all these, you know, non-rushing quarterbacks, like that's where we're going to be. So it's right now it's a cheat code. Like how much would I pay to have the insurance? Like he's basically that class of quarterback, same age range. So the way I would view it is like, how much are you willing to pay on top of Purdy for the insurance of you feel a little bit better about the long-term real life abilities of your quarterback to sustain that production? And it's like, I would pay a little. Like I would pay like for sure a late first. It's like I wouldn't pay two, right? Like I would way rather just roll with Purdy at like a 1.5 base first value than like Burrow at a 3.5 and put those other two to work in my lineup. So like I think he's legitimately a cheat code. I just hate it because I don't like cheating this way. I'm very pro cheating. Everybody on this podcast knows I love cheating. Stealing signals. I like steroids. I like flopping.
I like deflating footballs, all that stuff. I'm here for all of it.
He's pro spitball.
I'm pro the spitball. I'm pro deferring $680 million worth of contracts.
Oh, for fuck's
sake. I'm pro putting Robert Herjavec on a flight.
God, it's too early.
All these things. But in this case, point is, you're letting me cheat with Brock Purdy.
Yeah, I think the move is to trade your Justin Herbert for Brock Purdy plus. I mean, honestly, I think that's that, because
right, if you have there are people that are still going to feel like you guy.
And the Burrows and the all that. Trade him for Brock Purdy plus and prosper for 2 to 3 years, whatever it's going to be. Because Shanahan's not going anywhere fast unless he makes an insane speech to his locker room about communication and people want him excommunicado, like one Sean McDermott. If he does something dumb, sure, he might go somewhere. But other than that, they're not moving off him in San Francisco.
No, he's not. And Debo and McCaffrey are going to stay good for just long enough that people fully believe
if
in
you
Brock Purdy.
Send this to me right now. Estavio, send this to me right now. Right now. Send it to me this second. And it's a done deal. But if that first isn't 26, we're going to have a conversation. But send that to me right now.
Well, here.
Dare me. Do it. I'll do it live. I'll share the screen and accept it right now. I will share screen and accept the trade. Comment again.
You said, of course it's 26.
Of course it's 26. Well, it may not be as done of a deal. We might have to communicate. But look, do you think I would have a 24 first? Yeah, that's true. I think Purdy's good. I think he should be valued higher, but the move is to definitely trade any of the other stick figure quarterbacks and not stick figure. What am I talking about? Statue quarterbacks and just trade for Purdy plus with those guys. Let's move on. I can keep going on Purdy, but I think we hammer both sides of this.
Ultimately, we agree from a dynasty standpoint. Like we have the same take.
Yep. Yeah. One thing that I've worked so hard on my process is to just stop having strong player takes in terms of whether I like them or not. And that's completely removed real life from fantasy if I can. And it's really helped me progress from a standpoint. Speaking of players that I will trade for, let's talk about Matthew Stafford. We briefly mentioned Matthew Stafford. You and I are in a league together. Where today I did not want to ride Gardner Minshew into the promised land. I have a bye.
Big decision.
What's that?
Minshew will lead you wherever you need to go.
No, I'll take my chances with Stafford, and I'll tell you why. I traded Mark Andrews. Now keep in mind, I have a really good tight end room already. I traded Mark Andrews, Jameson Williams. Thank God I got him off my roster. My late confirmed late 24-1 and a 25-2, which I can recover for Stafford, Diggs, and Kittle. In this league where I already had the bye, we are absolutely thriving right now, and I love it. I still think league should have trade deadlines, but that's a conversation for a different day. But I took advantage of this one that didn't. Why I think Matthew Stafford is a league winner comes in part with my conversation again with Jake Tribby last night. It got me thinking. He gets the Commanders.
Oh,
this week.
The Commanders.
You have to make it to the semifinals to win the league. Don't you? So you kind of want to have the best matchup you possibly can to get there. And he has it. Since week 9, Stafford has logged 11 passing touchdowns with just 2 interceptions. He's taken 3 sacks. 3. That's it. Other quarterbacks in that touchdown list in this stretch, Stroud has taken 20. And Love, Dak, and Purdy have all taken 12 sacks. The play action, Cooper Kupp's recovery, the run game have been a godsend to Stafford, and it's showing. For some more fun stuff, he is 8th in fantasy points per game with 20.4. He's 7th in fantasy points per opportunity, 7th in fantasy points per dropback in that time. He's an absolute baller. He not only gets Washington, but he gets New Orleans and the Giants. They're in the playoff hunt. They're going to need to keep competing in these games. Kupp is healthy. Puka is an absolute baller. Kyren catches screen passes like nobody's business, and he pass protects. The play action game is alive and well. Sean McVay is in his fucking bag. If you don't have a trade deadline and you are kind of fringy with a quarterback too, go throw out offers for Matthew Stafford because he's going to be cheap to acquire and his upside is almost Brock Purdy-ian, if you would, for the playoff run, which is all
you
could
want. He's not going
want.
Anywhere. I think people he's have not. This idea of Stafford being like extremely old
Stetson
and frail.
Bennett,
and
bro.
he's like pretty old and frail, but I don't think like he's 100% starting in 2024.
Yeah.
I'd say he's probably starting in 2025. Like he is still like a legitimately top 10 NFL quarterback in my mind. Like he played his game yesterday against the Ravens was one of the best quarterback games all year in bad conditions on the road against a good defense. Like that was a phenomenal performance. And I mean, you watch some of the throws he made, like these were not a ton of, there were some that were wide open guys, but like you saw a lot of the Stafford trick shots where he's like falling away. He's changing arm angles. He's threading it over guys. He's threading it around guys. Like, you know, he's vintage Matt Stafford right now.
He threw the Cooper Kupp touchdown this week on the left side into the corner before Stafford hit halfway into his route. He was just fading
like
back.
This too.
Did not care about the pressure in his face. He was throwing sidearm bombs into the end zone. His connection with Kupp is back. I mean,
Kupp looks
it's
healthy,
just,
like legitimately healthy this week. That was the best he's looked, I think, all year.
Yeah, I agree. Hey, shout out Toronto Dave. Great trade, bruv. Hey, sometimes we got to pat ourselves on the back. Nick Fury says, what if he is really Tom Brady in regards to Brock Purdy? I think that's funny. I'm not going to go there. Obviously,
Maybe
Toronto Dave.
They just got to get him David Givens and Deion Branch to find out for sure.
Yeah. Jeez Louise. Okay. Next player. Want to talk about the next one? Let's talk about the next one. Do you have someone in mind or should I just keep going?
Up to you. I've got people in mind though. I got one for each position.
Okay. Hit me with your next one. I do have a running back. So the only one I don't have is a tight end. So.
Okay. So I tried to pick with the exception of the tight end, like the tight end is a guy who's really been scaling up lately. And it's pretty obvious. But the rest of them, I tried to pick guys that are a little bit more under the radar, or maybe they haven't been on the best run lately. And this running back would certainly fit into the category of guys who have actually not been trending very well lately, but I think have the opportunity to have a pretty massive rebound. And that's DeAndre Swift. DeAndre Swift has had an interesting season in that the first week was like, oh my God, he's a disaster. He's Kenny Gainwell's backup. Instantly takes over the lead role. And then was great for a while, and then has been like quite mediocre for basically 2 months. And I think people just started to realize it. Like he's now, I think he ranks right at the very edge of the bottom of the RB2 rank and points per game. I think the shine is kind of worn off now in the DeAndre Swift success story, where I've started to see people worry about him. And I do think that there are some aspects to this. It's like a legitimate problem. Jalen Hurts has been clearly battling through an injury. I think that has changed how defenses are defending them in zone read situations. And that's really limiting the holes that are available.
Per Adam Kaplan, all signs are pointing to the same thing. He thinks the same thing, and so do his sources. So it makes sense.
For sure. So, I mean, and that's part of the deal with Swift. It's like I've always said, like he's not that great of a technical runner. Like really, he's a dynamic athlete, get him out in space, but it works in the zone read because there's all these gaping holes because of what the attention that Hurts draws, the offensive line, and Swift can thrive in that. Some of that's dried up. But what hasn't dried up is this. The Eagles' last three games in the fantasy playoffs, Giants, Cardinals, Giants. That's absolutely bananas in terms of how fortunate.
Seattle Giants, Arizona.
Oh, Seattle Giants. Oh, is Giants their last game? Okay, well,
Giants
Seattle.
Week 18.
Right. Okay, Seattle as well. Anyway, all four of those, if you're a Week 18 league player, but all three of them in the fantasy playoffs.
If you're a Week 18 player,
are
don't
all
be.
Top five matchups. And Seattle, especially for pass-catching running backs, is even more of an elite matchup. You also see in history each year with Nick Sirianni now that he's been there. You know, I think he has like a head and heart battle where he understands that passing is the most efficient way to play in the NFL. They oftentimes will be a plus PROE team to start games, to start seasons. And when he runs into adverse situations, it seems like he leans back into the run. We saw that 2 years ago where they went into a run-heavy
set over the latter half of the year. We saw last year, they would have certain games where they would open up, pass. The offense would start sputtering, and they'd say, okay, let's have one of these drives. Even sometimes when they were behind, they would just start running the ball with Sanders and with Hurts. I could kind of see that happening here, where they get all of these rushing-friendly matchups with Seattle and Arizona and New York, and they start to lean into the running game here after Hurts has been kind of struggling. It's just going to be the beneficiary of that. I think he has an opportunity to really amass a ton of efficiency, to have a lot of goal line opportunities over the last 3 weeks. And probably people are not feeling that great about him right now after the last few weeks. So, you know, nobody has played the roller coaster game more with DeAndre Swift, of being in on Swift and out on Swift and in on Swift and out on Swift. So for the next 3 weeks, we're just filing ourselves up. We're in on Swift.
I just can't. The only thing that holds me back is the 1 yard plunge from Hurts. I refuse to use the name it was given, but the 1 yard plunge with Hurts scares me to death. Cause we know Swift might get one chance from inside the 3 or 5 yard line. And after right. that, it's all Hurts.
Yeah.
And they're just going to do it over and over. So he better get that one. And if for any reason, remember the Boston Scott theory against the Giants. Real risk that Boston true. Scott scoring a touchdown or two against the Giants.
Oh, right.
Right? It's narrative, but it's there. You know, in an unserious way, it's there.
That's the only narrative I believe in.
Death and taxes and Boston Scott scoring touchdowns against the Giants. It's just what happens. But that would be brutal. So that's my only hesitation. And as for his passing work, I wish he got it thrown to. He did not get a target last week against Dallas. Only 4 targets against San Francisco, 1 against Buffalo, 3 against Kansas City, 2 against Dallas, 3. He has not had more than. Oh, he had 6 against San Francisco. Sorry, 6 targets. But aside from that game, it wasn't since he played the Jets in week 6 that he amassed more than 3 targets in a game. Scares the shit out of me in terms of hoping that his.
I mean, here's the thing. Like, people think of DeAndre Swift as this pass game weapon, and kind of true. That's not really his role in this offense. Like, Kenny Gainwell plays the long down and distance.
For
Kenny
sure.
Gainwell plays the stuff from behind. But if you just forget all about that and you just think of DeAndre Swift as Miles Sanders from last year, Cardinals, Seahawks, Giants, like sure. you can get there on rushing.
I agree. I'm with you there. If the touchdown upside was a little bit more feasible, he has 5 total touchdowns on the year. I'm going to fade this one. Personally, I think we have a disagreement here. I don't think his touchdown upside is actually there, and the pass game work is too spotty. But I'm going to say I'm liking Boston Scott in week 16. Yeah, hey. You know, the best ball teams that I have that still made it, I drafted Boston Scott for this reason. So we're pulling for a Boston Scott touchdown against the Giants just for hilarity's sake. I get your points. The matchups are just so good. The Eagles, to me, are just too hard to predict outside of A.J. Brown being a fucking baller and the 1 yard plunge from Hurts. Outside of that, it's a little risky business for me. We'll see. So I disagree with that one. But I think you make great points. I don't know if the real test will be, will I play him against you in the league of record is going to be the question. Because he was on my bench.
I'd be terrified to see him.
Nah, I think this is what? No, fuck this. This is a reverse psychology moment where you are trying to nerf my upside with DeAndre Swift. I can see it. I cracked the code. You're not fooling me. Well, speaking of running backs, I'm going to hit you with one. I think it's James Cook. I think James Cook can be a legitimate league winner. Let me tell you why. Since his new offensive coordinator's taken over, through his, and especially in the last 2 games specifically, he has seen an increased target rate, catching 3, 6, and 5 receptions in those games, more than DeAndre Swift. He's also had 17, 16, and 10 opportunities on the ground. He has scored a couple of touchdowns. Again, the touchdown upside not real there. Why? Josh Allen exists, and he's a dog inside the 5. He's greedy. He's also become the guy there, even if his snap percentage isn't up over 50, which we would really like it to be. But let's be honest, he's not there for the designated pass protection and releasing opportunities. That's just not his. That's not his bag. That's Latavius Murray. But they've clearly shifted into using him more as a weapon. So we definitely like that. He has that low end RB1 on volume alone, and he's explosive enough to score touchdowns from outside of the five. He can just house it. I think Buffalo needs him to play well to stay in this race. Not in the, oh, they have to establish it type way. Don't hear what I'm not saying. I'm not an establish it guy. But they do need him to play well. He is one of their most explosive weapons. The new offensive coordinator seems to recognize that. He's fifth in points per game over this stretch, and he's only 15th in expected fantasy points per game. So the expected's not very good, but that's just a testament to his explosive play ability. So I'm going to roll with James Cook. Now, I'm not paying the iron price for him in Dynasty. I think he's like my least favorite bet of the low-end RB1 in Dynasty right now. Just, again, Josh Allen exists, the workload, all that. But the Fournette thing never materialized. They haven't worked him up. Everyone thought it was game over.
They've used Ty Johnson instead.
Yeah, and then Latavius Murray is still balling, which is crazy.
Wow, balling is in like he's doing a lot of this.
He's blocking.
For the people listening to really the audio, balling. I just made pass protection moments.
Right, and you had good form. You had really good form, I got to tell you. Really good form. But I like James Cook down the stretch run. Again, they need him, so it's a little bit more of a vibe play. But obviously the fantasy points have come, and we're just hoping that it continues. He gets Dallas, not a necessarily great matchup, but they can be run on if that game is competitive. The Chargers in week 16 is a unreal matchup, and New England, tough against the run. However, very beatable in the passing game, which is where the upside is with James Cook anyway. I think you can capitalize on that for sure.
By the way, I only co-sign this because the aesthetic next week, it's supposed to be a massive snow game in Buffalo.
Oh, love that.
And the LeSean McCoy Buffalo snow game vibes will be there. So if you want to reach into your memory hole and think of LeSean against the Colts all in the snow, you know, you want to play James Cook, like it'll be giving a really nice aesthetic this week.
Well, not even just that. Didn't Shady with the Eagles beat up
Shady
on the Bills?
Shady did with the Eagles, too, on the Lions.
Oh, it was on the
Eagles
Lions,
versus
yeah.
Lions, and it was Bills versus Colts for the two big
He was
Shady
the snow game god.
The snow games.
Yeah. Snow game god. So that's James. That's my argument for James Cook. I know D-Bro is going to love that.
Yeah.
D-Bro, when he hears this and sees this, he's going to do laps. But I also did warn you guys to stop taking James Cook at 106. Year like in his rookie year, so I really hope you guys listened because that was a bad move. All right, what do you got next?
Yeah, for wide receiver, this is my deepest sleeper, I think.
Ooh.
Look,
please
got a team. We got a team that you're very familiar with.
Okay.
That is going to get nonstop pass funnel matchups for their next three games against
offenses. This is. You can't
They're
let them go.
The Jaguars. You know, who are going to be stout against the run, wide open secondary.
I knew you'd find a way.
The 49ers are great defense everywhere, but they're much more beatable in their secondary than in their front seven. And then Miami, who we've seen, despite having a lot of talent in the secondary, they have been able to be thrown on, especially over the intermediate areas of the field and over the middle.
Will Levis the GOAT.
Zay Flowers is going to be attracting all the attention and should be. He's a great play. He's a better play than this guy on a week-to-week basis. But the guy who has really stepped up, who is leading the NFL in targets per route run over the last month, who has reached back into the fountain of youth and is slicing and dicing DBs, made two incredible adjustments on deep passes last week, picked one off the ground, and in a clutch conversion on the final drive for 14 yards. Look, Odell Beckham Jr. is going to be an every week starter. He's going to be a top 20 wide receiver during the fantasy playoffs. We're all the way back in on OBJ. Let's do this. Let's finish this right, Odell. He's going to go out on top as a fantasy football league winner, and then he's going to win the Super Bowl for the Baltimore Ravens. It's going to be incredible.
Okay. So he ran the wrong route on the touchdown, for the record.
That's fine.
He
adjusted.
Thrown ball. I'm just saying it was not a poorly thrown ball. I know the people are out there. Also, shout out to Lamar Jackson for learning how to underthrow a deep ball and not overthrow it. All three of his deep ball touchdowns, or all three of his like big deep balls, were all underthrown. Now, I just have one request. I like your pick. I think it's just an obvious one, so I don't have to dive too into it. I'm just going to make a couple personal calls on this and hope the Ravens staff pick up the message. Stop throwing a deep ball to Rashad Bateman. He's fucking terrible. Stop it. The interception, all Bateman had to do was come back to the ball, and that's a PI. That is a free PI. Instead, he watched the DB just cut. He didn't even try to come back for the ball and cause a pass interference with the way penalties are being called. Every time you throw to that fucking guy, it doesn't work. Stop it. OBJ is cooking dudes better deep than Rashad Bateman. Rashad Bateman should not catch a pass farther than 5 yards down the fucking field. Get him. I'd rather Patrick Ricard catch passes than Rashad Bateman. Fucking terrible. He is making nothing but mistakes. Stop doing it. Get him off the field.
You know who's been low-key clutch for Baltimore this year is actually Aguilar. Like,
yeah, aside from
he doesn't have a massive role, but like he makes one or two like clutch contested catches every game.
He should have Bateman's role. He should fucking have. Okay, aside from the massive drop against Pittsburgh that was like just egregious, he's been
every Baltimore wide receiver lost their mind against Pittsburgh.
Yeah, it's just insane. He should have Bateman's role. What the fuck are we doing? Just cut your losses. The sunk cost fallacy is hitting Baltimore. Every time they throw a deep ball and it doesn't work, I'm like, that was number seven. I look, it's like, yeah, oh, fuck, that was number seven. I'd rather Charlie Kolar get more deep balls in this offense than Rashad Bateman.
They should get Tylan Wallace involved after
like,
the big punt return.
Yes! Rashad Bateman is the fetch of the wide receiver room. Stop trying to make it happen. Okay? He's not sitting with us. He's not getting in the car. We're not going shopping with him. He is fucking terrible. I want to see him in another uniform next year. I'm so miserable about it. But please stop throwing. It's going to be interception city if we throw deep balls.
I had no idea Bateman was had this effect on Ravens fans.
I'm over him.
Apparently
I'm
he's like him. Sky Moore East based on this.
Speaking of Sky Moore, the wide receiver I have for my league winner. No, it's not Sky Moore. It's actually Rashee Rice.
I'm Sky Moore?
It's not Sky Moore. It's Rashee Rice. And the reason for that is he's a full-time player now, and he's fucking balling. He's been so good. He is out-targeting Travis Kelce in a per-route basis since his uptick. And, guys, that means he's the bona fide wide receiver one in Kansas City. 17.1 expected fantasy points per game, 19.4 fantasy points per game over his last three games. He's fifth in expected fantasy points per game per route run in that span. Yes, the Kansas City Chiefs are easy to pick on right now. All the, look at Mahomes, whiny bitch, etc. And also, for the people that have an issue with, like, Mahomes losing his shit, and oh my God. Yeah, I get it. It took Tom Brady, like, 12 years to accomplish the feat that Patrick Mahomes has done in, like, five. For people to hate him this much, so he's actually the GOAT, and you can at me if you want, because you hate him like Brady already, and he hasn't won like Brady yet, so take that for what you will, a little bit of narrative, but look, he gets New England, terrible pass defense, their run defense good, terrible pass defense, then he gets Vegas, who are just terrible, and then he gets Cincinnati, another awful pass defense. For the fantasy playoffs, he has been absolute dog water. I understand. I actually, for a minute, considered starting Jake Browning. I considered it. I was talking to Jake Tribby yesterday when we sat down. I was like, I'm really debating it, dude. Like, he's just been so bad. 13, 13, 20, 16, 15. He's just been average in 4-point passing touchdown leagues. They're coming for that number one seed. They have an outside shot at it, but they have a shot at it with Miami's loss and Baltimore doing Baltimore things at the end of games. There's an opportunity for Kansas City to take it. They're going to want it. They're going to be pissed off and mad. And if you don't think that matters, I think you're nuts. I think it matters. They have three matchups where they can go out and absolutely crush the opposing team. He's still throwing the ball a lot. 42, 38, 30, 43, 34, 33, 43 attempts over his last stretch of games. Unbelievable. He's coming for his bonuses. He's coming for his stats. He's coming for the wins. You want Rashee Rice because that dude is going to perform. He's not just the screen guy now. He's their legit one. The Justin Watson craze is over. And we were looking for that rookie late season breakout at wide receiver. And I think Rashee Rice is going to be the guy over all the rest right now. Well, except, I mean, Puka doesn't even count anymore. He's been breaking out since week one. But there's my case. Rashee Rice, breakout wide receiver at the end of the year. League winner, legitimate.
Love it. Yeah, no, I'm a big, big fan of Rice. I don't have anything to add to that.
His price was absolutely crazy. 206, 207. Boy, did I whiff on that. I think it was just Sky Moore burnout. Do you have another? What else you got? Is that?
Yeah, my tight end is obvious. Like I was trying to think of like an under the radar tight end choice.
Can I guess it? Hold on. Can I try?
I couldn't
to guess
really
it?
Come up with one. So sure.
David Njoku.
Yeah, it's David Njoku.
Yes. I know.
So it's not.
Yes.
It's not.
God,
it's not
I know
an obvious,
you so
it's not,
well.
It's not an under the radar call. It's a boring call. He just
you just
30
love
points
him
last
though.
Week.
That's
for
it.
The record. He would have also been my call if we did this a week ago before he scored 30 points. But they're throwing it so much more with Joe Flacco. Njoku.
He's the fucking goat.
Look, I'm not really sure why Deshaun Watson doesn't like throwing to David Njoku, but every quarterback that's not Deshaun Watson that David Njoku has had over the last couple of years, his target rate just immediately goes up by 5%. He scored 2 more points per game with non-Watson quarterbacks, and that even includes like games with a burnt face and Dorian Thompson-Robinson. So yeah. He's been the focal point of this offense. It really flows in the passing game through him and Cooper. And they're going to probably continue to throw with Joe Flacco. They posted one of the highest pass rates over expectation with Joe Flacco. Flacco's obviously not taking away any plays with scrambling in the way that Deshaun Watson or PJ Walker or Dorian Thompson-Robinson did. And look, Joe Flacco's an old man. He doesn't want to get hit. He's getting that ball out quickly. So anytime that he's dropping back to pass, that's resulting in a pass attempt. He's not scrambling. He's not going to eat sacks. It's getting the ball out. And right now he's getting the ball to David Njoku. So I have Njoku as one of my, I think he might be my most rostered tight end among teams that made playoffs. I'm very, very excited for it. I think he's going to continue to rack up points. They use him at all levels. They give him like legitimate air yards and seam routes. They use him as a guy that they isolate up in the red zone. And they use him a ton in the screen game. Another interesting note on him is Jerome Ford left with a hand injury. I have no idea if he's going to miss any time. He might be totally fine. But
right.
Ford, where he's really separated from Hunt, is they really seem to prefer using Ford in the passing game, in the screen game. They don't really do that as much with Hunt. So if they're not using, if they don't have the opportunity to use Ford, or if Ford plays, but like his hand is bad and they don't trust him to catch or something, maybe that's even more screen game work for David Njoku. So I'm very, very excited for Njoku as a fantasy playoff. So I think he can finish as a top 5 tight end.
Yeah, I mean, he's tight end 7 right now. He did have the one dud game the previous week, but look, it's tight end. They're not all going to be glorious. He is the prince that was promised this year. And his, just to add a little bit of context to what you're talking about and how he is the offense, because maybe some people don't realize it. 8 targets, 6, 9, 15, 9, 6, 8, and 9 since week 7. He gets Chicago, very beatable over the middle. Houston, we saw again what Zach Wilson and the Conk Daddy was able to do against Houston. And then we get the Jets. I mean, the Jets are a good defense, but hey, slinging Joe. Can we also just, I want to give one shout out right now to Joe Flacco. If the Ravens don't make the Super Bowl, I'm rooting Browns. Because an AFC championship game where Joe Flacco has to come in to Baltimore and play the Ravens in what could be his final game is majestic. And I would want no one else on the call more then I want Kevin Harlan. Kevin Harlan needs to do more playoff games. This is going to be our last little bit before we take off on the show. We talked about right before the show that Al Michaels is being removed from playoff games, which I think it's time.
And I hate it. I hate it. I think love it's Al Michaels being disinterested, talking about gambling lines. I'm
but
here for it.
Even when something exciting happens, he puts me to sleep. It's really bad. So we were talking about our, like, what our dream booth would be. And I think it's any combination of, like, Romo and Harlan. Or I like your pick as well.
I love Gus Johnson. He's the best. Up the middle! He's like, I don't know. He's the best. He makes every single play feel like it's the biggest play in the history of the sport.
He's
it's
great.
A travesty that we don't get him for NFL stuff very frequently. But I love Gus.
Yeah, I think Kevin Harlan, Gus Johnson would be just they couldn't do it. Because they both have the same job, but
yes.
you add a Tony Romo in there, Kirk Herbstreit in there. I think it would be great. I think we could do without the Troy Aikman trying to figure out what analytics is every week. And can I just also say about Aikman? We get it. You didn't get the Cowboys game. You don't have to be a miserable prick the whole time. That dude, when he doesn't get a Cowboys game, is so miserable. I remember there was the one year, it was recent, I don't know if it was last year or the year before that, where he was like, yeah, well, there's a better game going on another network. And I'm just like, we get it, dude. You only want to sign the contract with the Cowboys and do their local. Like, he's a miserable prick when he doesn't get the Cowboys games. It's so bad. It's so noticeably bad. And I love Joe Buck. Joe Buck tries his best, right? He's shitting on the refs for how long it takes, and I love that. I think we have to do that. He doesn't shit on analytics or whatever as often as Aikman do, but separate him.
One for the stupid comments about analytics is by a mile Mark Sanchez.
He's the worst.
Mark Sanchez is my least favorite addition to a broadcast team of anyone. Like, he's just... That guy is thick as a brick. I absolutely cannot with Mark Sanchez. He drives me completely crazy.
He's terrible.
Yeah, it's brutal for me.
But let's start a protest now where we get Kevin Harlan, Gus Johnson, Kirk Herbstreit, and Tony Romo. That should be the matchup. Any combination of those four to me would be the nuts matchup, in my opinion. Also, Charles Davis. We need a little bit more Charles Davis. That guy knows his shit too. I also like Olsen, but... For the top four, what I would want for the AFC and NFC championship game.
He's
give me the AFC
favorite.
NFC championship game. Give me Olsen, Herbstreit, and Romo combined with like Kevin Harlan, Gus Johnson. That would be the nuts matchup. Let us know what your dream commentator matchup would be for the playoffs. They have to be commentators now. We can't be like, well, I want Brady and Manning. Like, we get it. I miss John Madden too, guys, but those days are gone. We're not drawing nets and sketches on turkeys anymore. But just some smart, intelligent commentators and exciting ones. That let us know in the comments what your dream commentating crew is. The best comment gets a win. And there is one thing I do have to go back and find. If you just give me 1 minute. I did mention, you posted on the amateur porn site known as X.com. I posted a picture that says, is Zeke about to kick off a league-winning stretch run tonight? Yes or no? Leave a comment. Best comment makes fantasy points, dynasty points episode this week. And we have the winning comment. And yes, he did. He did absolutely crush it. Estavio says he's now watching Gus Johnson calls just because. Well, do it after this show, Estavio. But the winning comment, we had a couple good ones, but they weren't quite there. The winning comment comes from emo_cowboy. It's Tyler. You should drop him a follow. It says, does a road bump provide enough stimulus for a female orgasm? In most cases, no. But for the right person... parentheses roster that is dying for something, anything to provide enough juice to get there. Maybe. The winning comment. A phenomenal comment. That had to win. So shout out again. That is emo underscore cowboy. Truly, truly wonderful.
Oh, he's the best.
Yeah, that's a great comment. Okay. Yeah.
Tyler, Jacob, is 1-1.
Yeah, we gotta holler at him. He's gotta drop that follow, baby. Come on.
I got the chance to meet him in Vegas, and he's unhinged in the best way.
It was a phenomenal. He won. He was like the first comment, and I was like, "It's over. Like no one is gonna top that." TD says his dream crew is Tom, Jacob, and Lucas. I think that would be a nightmarish. I think Jacob and I would actually do battle in that small box, live, separating football and never punting. And your war against punting is just my favorite. True. It's returning it's punts. First it's fielding first, punts.
It's true. It's true. I don't believe in any of it. I don't believe in any special teams.
Except never, for the never Ravens return winning a punt. The game.
Never return a punt. Also never punt. Never go after a punter. Never always protect the punter. Just avoid any punting or kicking themed events.
I love that.
You know, first that's we so came good. For the running backs, and they did nothing for they were not a running back. Now we came for the kickers and the punters. We'll see if anyone stands up for them. It's unlikely.
Hey, but Pat McAfee's around.
Tom will be the last one to stand up for the kickers and the punters.
Justin Tucker, baby. When Justin Tucker's out, we can have the conversation, okay?
Did you see that Younghoe Koo for one game took over the all-time yep. accuracy lead, and then he immediately missed two field goals because Tucker put a hex on him?
We're actually kind of in the golden age of kickers, like a new age of kickers in the NFL. Like there are so many good ones. It's kind of crazy. Like Aubrey, I can't name them all because they're kickers, but there are some legitimate hashtag good kickers in the NFL now. So that's
Bindles. I mean, when I was growing up, like you used to have like employed kickers that were like 75%, and that now like you're no longer a part of the league if that's your
situation. You can be dropped at any given time if you're a kicker. Like there's
no more room for the Billy Cundiffs of the world.
Fuck that guy. Okay, the wide left. The Patriots would have won that game. Also, fuck Lee Evans for dropping that ball too. That was a perfectly placed ball. They had their path to the Super Bowl that year. They could have went back to back, but at the same time, that kick meant that we were forced to draft Justin Tucker, should be first ballot Hall of Famer, even though he's a kicker. He's just unreal. But seriously, fuck you, Billy Cundiff. And everything you stand for that one game. Also, fuck you, Lee Evans, for dropping that ball and ruining Joe Flacco's multiple Super Bowl legacy, surefire Hall of Fame career. God. Wow. Okay, look.
I knew that was Jacob,
thinking about thinking, we got to get you out of here. Thinking about thinking, what's up for this week? What changes in the offseason content for anyone that's not subscribed? And if you aren't subscribed, link will be in the description for Thinking About Thinking, Jacob's Unreal Substack.
Yeah, so the running back stuff is kind of shifting because obviously if you're redraft, we're now into playoff mode. Most people are out of fab. If you're doing dynasty leagues, most leagues have already had their trade deadline come and go. We're going to be looking a little bit more matchup based, which means I'm going to be writing the column to come out Friday mornings instead of Tuesday mornings because I want a little more injury information, a little bit more clarity in terms of, if there's any coach speak or anything like that. And it'll be, I wouldn't say quite like a start sit column, but a little bit more in that vein than a looking back on the week that was. I'm also going to be mostly doing playoff tournament stuff. I put a little post, I don't really know. Like I think a lot of my subscribers are probably pretty dynasty focused. We did a lot of best ball stuff over the summer, but I'm just not quite sure how many of them have really tried playoff best ball tournaments before. So I put out kind of a notice just asking like, hey, where are you guys at with this? What's the kind of content you'd like to see on this? So we'll have something up probably that's a little bit more evergreen on this Saturday. I'll probably delve into some of the teams and some of the sort of playoff odds maybe next week. And then we'll kind of build up on the underdog stuff. The gauntlet is going right now. And there'll be Mittens, which is like the small $5 playoff tournament. And that'll all kind of lead up to, we'll do some content for the FFPC playoff challenge ultimately. right after the season, because that's my favorite form of fantasy football, I would say, the entire year. So we'll make sure to do an episode on that, or an article on that, or both.
Oh, for sure. Can't wait. Thinkable Thingy, if you're not Bindles, Thinkable Thingy is top tier. It is the only written content that I read in fantasy football. It's the only one I take my time to go and read. A, because I'm not a good reader. I think that has to be made pretty clear. I'm pretty blue collar. I'm not a great reader. But Jacob makes it really easy for everybody. This is not just hyper, super nerd stuff. If you want great, obscure music and movie references, TV references, Jacob is your guy. I think he puts more effort into that and his intros to his articles than the articles themselves. It's more than well worth it. It's phenomenal. Next week, we're right back here. Same bat time, same bat channel. Obviously, all of the Fantasy Points video content free, except for matchup points and, of course, John Proctor's Sunday morning DFS show. But cashing points, all that free, final points free, head in there, lock in there. The early bird special for fantasypoints.com going on, I believe, now, if not soon. It'll be the Fantasy Points premium and data suite will be cheaper than it will be all year next year. You're going to want to head into that. Stay tuned, fantasypoints.com. We're going to be giving away data suite subscriptions, all that stuff, into the off season. This is a great time. I mean, it's not often. It's just the two of us. But every time it is, I really feel like it's a little bit different with just the two of us. So I like it. Mm-hmm. This is fun. Can't wait to see Lucas back next week. Also, tune in to the Full Tilt Devi show on Monday next week with a possible appearance from one Josh Chevalier of fantasypoints.com. Like we talked about at the top of the show, real shitty to have Andre Brower pass away. But again, it's why we always talk about checking in on your loved ones, even when you're not sure that they need it, especially with the holidays coming around. It's a happy time, but it can be a depressing time. So check it on your friends, your family, your loved ones. Be kind to one another. Remember, it's playoff time. It should be fun. You should have a great time. The trash talk should be plentiful, but keep it within pocket. Remember, there's people on the other side of those screens. Remember that clear eyes and full hearts can never lose on your best days. Well, goddamn, they're always spent tilting. Great time. See you next week, everybody.